Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host.
You just what?
I swallowed my air. I inhaled too deeply. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you.
You gotta stop hyperventilating on this program, Melody. You can't. This is radio. You can't do hyperventilation on the radio.
I'm
you
so sorry, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And there's no other program in the whole wide world that has as much fun in the openings as we do here at Discount Gold and Silver. So we are very unique, are we not, Al? Today is Wednesday, March 26, 2014. We have lots of things to talk about, and I just want to relay. Next week we have we have a lot of guests on the programs next week. We have Richard Bolrath. On Monday we're going to be discussing the blood moons that are coming up. Tuesday, Al, you have a guest on. We'll be talking about
Byron Dale. And we'll be talking about the nature of money.
Mm-hmm. And Wednesday, we have Greg Hunter. We're going to be talking about the G20 meeting, the importance of that that's coming up. I believe that date is April 10th. So lots of things coming up. Later on the month, we will have James Corbett of the Corbett Report. And, of course, he's took over the writing for the late Robert Chapman, the financial newsletter. The international forecaster. So, and we will have David Krieger back on. So lots of things going on this month, lots of things to talk about that will affect you and your wealth. Tomorrow we have some major, I don't know how major they are, but some business events that are scheduled to come out tomorrow. You have the Labor Department. They're going to release their weekly jobless claims in the morning. You have the Commerce Department releasing the fourth quarter gross domestic product, and the National Association of Realtors are going to be releasing their pending home sales index for February. But let's talk about today. Today we had gold. We have gold down $9.50, $9.50. It was up earlier in trading, but she did break down through 13 once, but she did pop back 13.03. I'd like to call them a few choice names. Silver down 24, 1986. You have platinum down 15 at 1410, and palladium 784 down 8. The USDX today is trading, of course, that's got to be higher, but really, folks, it's still below 80. 0.03 at $79.98 crude oil, but buck 100.22. And the stock market was also higher. They had a big turnaround on the day. The paper markets, interesting. The Federal Reserve denies Citigroup's request to increase its dividends to its shareholders. Interesting.
That's real interesting.
Yes, it is. So we'll be talking about that after the first break. We'll get a little bit of feed on that and see what that's all going about. So, yeah, interesting. Well, I'll tell you what. Anyway, the Dow was down, turned around, down 100 points, 16,268. The NASDAQ down 60. And they just came, they supposedly all these banks passed their stress test as the Federal Reserve. I didn't know the Federal Reserve did their own stress test, but, you know, it's kind of like checking out your own checking account. Yeah, it's good. I don't have any money in there, but it's good. The S&P down 13 and 18.52, and the 10-year yield, 2.70, down 0.03. There we have it now. We do have a couple of reports today. Younger workers are having a hard time finding work and keeping jobs. I don't think that's any big surprise, but yet whenever you see it in print, it just goes to show you that perhaps the job recovery, the amount of jobs and the type of jobs, you know, are not there. Or is it just the young people? Or are they really having a hard time finding work? Or are they just not working? They just don't want to work.
Looking for work in all the wrong places.
And keeping jobs.
That was a song. That was a country song they had back probably 20 years ago.
I remember that. I remember that. Levi Strauss is planning to eliminate 800 positions, almost 20% of its non-retail and non-manufacturing employees over the next 12 to 18 months. The privately held company said that its restructuring plan will help it to become more competitive, lower costs, and improve its financial health. I got another thing we're going to talk about, trade talks. It's interesting because they're really going ahead with the Pacific and European trade agreements. And it's amazing about how they come out and talk about how great these trade agreements are doing and how it helps medium to small businesses. And we have both the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. You know, does it really have to do about getting goods, or does it have to do about stocks and shares and those types of investments? But
Are you asking me?
Al, they say it's good, Al.
Well, they say it's good, but the only people that do well from global free trade are those that are multinational corporations. That's who it's good for. Because the people who are multinational corporations have the resources to build their products where labor is cheap and sell them all the way across the Pacific Ocean to people like ourselves who still have enough credit to buy things. They can produce at very low prices, and they can sell at comparatively high prices, and they can make a fat profit. Now, the average man can't do that because the average man cannot work in this country and sell in a foreign country. We are, for most of us, demand, all demand and sales and the rest of that, it's all local. It's presumed to be local. We don't have, the individual doesn't have the opportunity to take advantage of that international situation. The big multinational corporations do. They are the ones that benefit. They're the ones that are being served. I haven't read the report you've mentioned. I don't know what it actually says. But my guess is it's just a certain amount of nonsense. Insofar as they're saying, oh, it's here to help medium and small companies. Yeah, if they can do business overseas, yes, it'll give them a little help. But the ones that are going to profit from this are the big multinational corporations. On top of which, you know, they try to do this global free trade as if it's going to be just the panacea for the world. We're all going to just do better. bunk. American standard of living is going down. It's going to continue to go down until Americans' labor rates begin to approximate those found in other countries with compensation for crossing the Pacific Ocean or moving products up from Central America or South America to this country. We're not going to do better under global free trade. And as a nation, we will be impoverished. It'll be great for China and India, perhaps Africa, and to some degree Mexico and South America and so on. But it's going to be terrible. It's going to be very, it's not going to be good for Europe. It's not going to be good for the United States. We're going to pay a price. So they have to sell it, and a lot of people will be foolish enough to buy that sales pitch, but I don't believe the sales pitch is based on, I don't think it's truthful.
I don't either, and I don't see how these politicians come out and say how great it is. Sam Graves out of Missouri is chairman of the House Small Business Committee. You know, he talks about it's great. They're important. They open up marketplaces to small businesses. Hello?
Uh-huh.
Which ultimately translates into more jobs and greater economic growth. Hello? You know, NAFTA is a 20-year-old trade agreement, and gee, what has that accomplished? I mean, how do they not see this? How can they come out and say this is good? Hey, it eliminated tariffs on products that are at least 51% made in the U.S. Hey, that helps U.S. manufacturers compete. How does that work? I mean, they just come out.
It only helps them compete if they can cut their labor costs.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, if they're going to do that, what's going to happen to the standard of living in this country? What's going to happen to the American dream of every generation living at a higher standard of living than the previous generation? That dream was true up and through about 1970s thereabouts, and now it's gone stagnant and perhaps even into decline. Who really believes the next generation will live better than the previous generation? I don't think anyone really does. I know that some classes, the upper class, people that are tangled up in global free trade, yeah, they're going to do fine. But the majority of people are going to find themselves, particularly if they're productive, they're going to find themselves competing. I won't necessarily say a majority, but a significant portion of the workforce is going to find themselves competing with China. They say this global free trade opens up the doors of competition. Great. But it necessarily means that it's not just competition between corporations, it's competition between laborers. American labor is now competing with Chinese labor. Right? And we will not do well. Now, it may be that I've seen reports that right now, after you factor in the cost of crossing, hauling products across the Pacific, that American labor has become as productive, as cost-effective as Chinese labor. And even though they may be paying their laborers less money per hour, we are taking advantage of technological innovations that are allowing one man to do more work in this country. And therefore, we are now perhaps, our labor is perhaps comparable. In total overall cost, it may be comparable to that of China. But that's based on the idea that we are replacing a bunch of people who used to have jobs, and we're going to replace them with machines. Now, that is an inevitable part of life, but just the same, insofar as it's been accelerated. Yeah, the guy that's left to run a machine that replaced 10 other men may be, his labor costs may actually be less or comparable to that of China. But what about the people who lost their jobs? There's not an easy solution to this, but there is an absolutely obvious problem. We have a serious problem of unemployment, and it's not going to just go away. We are certainly not going to see unemployment diminish to a significant degree so long as we have global free trade, low tariffs. We're not going to see that happen in this country for some time. Now what do we do? Now, in order to engage in global free trade, we have to carry a portion of the population that is a larger percentage who are unemployed. Who's going to pay for them to sit home and watch TV? And the answer is those people still have jobs. How is this going to work out? How is it going to balance out? I don't know. I can't tell you, but I don't see a happy ending coming out of global free trade. This is bad business for the United States. And I leave it up to you, Melody, to solve the problem.
Solve the problem?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let's have a stable currency.
Well, that's one of them.
Yep.
That's one part of the solution. But the other one is this. You know, you've got to actually build your own products. This business about relying on China, for example, to produce products for us, it's just self-destructive. It's what we have to do. We have to build our own computers, TVs, automobiles. We've got to build them here in this country. We have to become independent. And under those circumstances, we have resources and technology and infrastructure where we can be quite prosperous if we trade amongst ourselves. All right? And we keep the tariffs up where we don't allow cheap labor to come into the country. It may be that our labor will be paid more than perhaps they're worth on the global markets, but if we have the technology to back them up, we can still wind up with products that we can sell overseas. And people say, oh my gosh, it's made in America. That's cool. It's going to be great. It's made in America. Nobody says that anymore. They did say it. They said it from, you know, the end of World War II on up until at least the 70s. But now we've moved off in another direction. And they say, oh, global free trade. And that result, what do we produce that anyone envies right now? They're aircraft, there's Tesla automobiles, there's odds and ends. They can't say there's nothing. But it's not like it was. We have given away our competitive advantage. Our government has given it away. And we are left to try to make ends meet with lower incomes. And I don't see... And it's not just a question of whether we make ends meet. Right? It's not a question of whether the average man's income is $20,000 a year, or $50,000, or $100,000. It's not just about the money. It's about the treason. It's about the betrayal. It's about having a government who is willing to sacrifice your future and your children's future so they can engage in some, they can help create a new world order based to a significant degree on global free trade. Got a caller. Jim is on the line from West Virginia. We've only got, what have we got before we take our break? About a minute and a half. Jim, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. And you guys, I really wish you'd focus closer. Now, I served industry for about a quarter of a century, industrial instrumentation control systems, including robotics. Oh, back 30 years ago, I was screaming because OSHA was destroying it, and EPA was destroying the steel industry in northern West Virginia. But I didn't have any friends who worked for steel industry, so nobody cared. Oh, after that, they started tearing apart the chemical industries. They shut them down one unit at a plant time. They wouldn't shut down the whole plant because then it would become an EPA super site, and all these men running around in spacesuits jacking up millions and millions of dollars bills to sit there and scrape up little pieces of dirt. But not too many of my friends work in the chemical industry. Now their EPA is coming after smokestacks. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, I have been in, I won't name the company names, but I have been in dang near half the plants in West Virginia and parts of Ohio and Kentucky and Virginia because they couldn't find anybody else crazy enough to work on the stuff I worked on. I have heard story after story of destruction of businesses, utter destruction. Yeah, let me roll with this.
I'll tell you what. Why don't you save your example? We're going to take a break here for some commercial announcements, and we'll get back with your example when we return on Financial Survival. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom, and Jim from West Virginia is on the phone. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
If you have have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit, toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We've got Jim from West Virginia on hold. He'll be with us in a moment. And Joe from Arkansas is calling in, and we'll get to Joe shortly. And Melody, what's next?
Well, let's go ahead and get right to let's get right back to Jim, please.
All right, Jim, what you got? You were talking about being in plants that are being destroyed by our own government.
Absolutely. There's a fellow. Okay. There's a little bitty creek near me. And somebody, somehow some trash got into the creek. It got caught in the underbrush in front of a sawmill. So lo and behold, they hit him with creek littering, even though he didn't put the trash there. Now, all there was trash all up and down that creek a little bit where some was there. They chose to hit him. They're talking 5 digits. In the meantime, he sold a $50,000 load of lumber to Canada. The Canadian firm burned him. Our State Department won't do a dang thing about it. Now, that's one of them. FMC Corporation. I'll go ahead and name it. Okay, they had a soda ash chlorine plant in South Charles, West Virginia. I took care of their computer peripherals and some of their instrumentation. They had to shut it down. It's the only one that went down was the one in West Virginia because of business tax and everything else. We were talking about this stuff. The head comptroller dude, the accounting guy there, and he wouldn't say it, but he handed me a figure, a piece of paper with 2 figures on it. One was what the people, FMC, and their employees got out of it. The other was what the government got out of it. They destroyed it, even though it destroyed the government. I've been in coal plant after coal plant. I don't know how many of them. Shut down right and left. Coke ovens. They were a certain design of coke ovens. The EPA says, well, from now on, you can't fix those to make coke out of coal to make steel with. They shut down the Bessemer converters. What I'm trying to tell you is, listen, I think our sheriffs and our people need to grow a brain. And just the sheriff says, EPA, you ain't doing that here. OSHA, you ain't doing that here. EPA doesn't have enforcement power. But from now on, I mean, granted, we can't do anything about the free trade agreements, but for crying out loud, I had a one-man technical shop, and the government got more out of it, the feds got more out of it than I got, because of the Social Security, the employers' employees' shares, and the income tax. Now, I'm fed up and sick and tired of it. If you want to create unemployment, if you want to drive a business out of the taxing jurisdiction and overseas, Go ahead and tax businesses. Go ahead. You jack up the prices, unemployment, business destruction. Listen, we cannot look these idiots globally to do anything. We got to think locally. And it's time to grow a brain on this and quit. The number one thing is our own stinking governments. And I've said all I can say on it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you 100%. We talked back last year sometime, again, about two economists, a report they'd produced where they calculated that if the level of regulation in this country was the same today as it was in 1949, the median household income, which is $53,000, would instead be over $300,000 per household. We don't have any problems we couldn't solve if our income was increased by a factor of six. And even if they're mistaken, how many problems do most of us have that we couldn't solve if our income was just doubled? The point. Their point, the report they generated, was that the government was literally destroying this economy.
Well, if you look at these groups like the EPA and OSHA that he's talking about, they're closing down these plants, yeah. And everybody thinks, oh, well, that's good because it's green and, you know, it's really keeping this country nice and pretty and all this, while these jobs are all going overseas to China. And you know what their pollution control is like, but then we get to buy all these silly little trinkets and junk, basically, from China.
And we also lose our ability to work.
Yes, exactly.
You know, you put a man out of work, you don't just put him back, so you've been out of work for 5 years. Come on back and start your job. No, it's not that simple. There is a body of knowledge that's there among a group of employees, and they know how things work. And you aren't going to just bring them back in and set them in the same place and make things work again. They have to learn this all over, and the situation has been changed. It's just bad business. It's bad business for this country. It's bad business for the American people, and the government does it just the same. And I can't believe they do it by accident. Jim, did you have anything else you wanted to add, or can we move on to Joe? Jim is gone. Joe from Arkansas, are you here?
Yes, hello, Alan Melody. Yeah, you've been talking about the global free trade situation. I just wanted to make this point. And that's that we hear quite a bit these days about how the whole world economy is depressed, that even the growth rate of China's economy is slowing down. And I figure it must be because of global free trade. You know, they tell us it's going to make everybody prosperous because it opens up a huge market area for everybody to sell in. But the thing is, you can't sell if people don't have money to buy. And what global free trade does is it makes it so these corporations, you know, they can go to wherever they can buy the cheapest raw materials, buy the raw materials there. They can go to wherever they can hire the cheapest labor and pay the lowest wages in the world to manufacture their stuff. And then they can take it to wherever the people, you know, have some money to buy the stuff. But, you know, those people there have...
And how do we get money to buy it when
lower wage countries? And so they soon run out of money with which they can buy the stuff produced in the lower wage countries. So basically what it does is it depresses the earnings of people all over the world, whoever's employed in raw materials. Their earnings are low because their raw materials are selling at the world's lowest price. Whoever's in manufacturing, their wages are low because they're manufacturing at the world's lowest wage. And the people in the high-wage countries have lost their jobs, so they run out of the ability to buy the stuff pretty soon. And so the global free trade opens up this huge market area where nobody has money to buy stuff, so the whole world economy is depressed because of it.
Yeah, and you'll wind up with, when we say the whole world economy is depressed, it means that virtually everyone in the world winds up having a lower standard of living. Mm-hmm. Right? If we're all broke, we can't buy anything. If we can't buy anything, we can't produce anything. And who is going to do well? A small elite up at the top who are in a position to control major factories, multi-level corporations, that sort of thing. There will be an oligarchy that will apparently run the world, or that's what they have in mind, while the rest of us peons are so busy scrambling and struggling against each other just to find a couple chicken bones to chew on that we don't have time to recognize who our real adversaries are. They're too busy just trying to survive. It's not going to be a good thing.
And it looks like that oligarchy has so much money with which to bribe congressmen, enticingly, that they will vote for more free trade, even though the NAFTA and GATT agreements have already proved to be a disaster to our economy, and more promises to make things even worse. But they're bribed so handsomely by these oligarchies that you're talking about and by the people that benefit from the global free trade that they'll vote for it, even though it destroys the country.
Joe, do I know you?
I've never met you, Al.
Okay. Your voice sounds like somebody I know, and I can't think of who it is right now. Sounds like somebody I know, and I can't exactly put my finger on. But you're right. We're going to be damaged, and one of the key things I talk about from time to time on the program, why does it happen? It happens because your Congress has turned into a bunch of treasonous whores who will do anything if the money's right. They no longer legislate, they broker the legislation. You come in with a bill, you hand them enough money, they'll see to it that it gets passed. Or at least they'll do their level best. They don't read them, they don't write them, they don't really legislate, they just broker. This goes back to the political campaign contribution laws. And there's the Achilles heel in the system. We've allowed Congress to take as much money, or virtually as much money, as they can lay hands on and get away with it. Now, that may be an exaggeration, but it's still, there's a fundamental truth to it. Something's got to be done where congressmen cannot collect money from lobbyists. They can't do it. And if they do, they can't be allowed to vote on the laws that the lobbyists advocate. If you're going to take some money from some lobbyist, they call it a political campaign contribution, but it's not. It's a bribe. That's what's going on, and your Congress is taking bribes, and they're selling out to the highest bidder. And the highest bidder will not be the people in the middle class, and certainly not the poor people. They don't have any money to give Congress. And so far as Congress is looking to fatten their own nest eggs, they are going to do business with the rich, and the rich will bribe the Congress to pass more laws to allow the rich to take more money from the middle class and the poor, and even the upper middle class. It becomes a kind of legalized theft, or at least legalized extortion. And the whole thing, it's rotten, it stinks, it makes you wince, it makes you angry. And it seems to continue, and it will continue until the American people finally wake up to this and understand the problem, and also do something about it.
But that's the whole point, Al. I mean, this will play itself out. And the only thing that I believe that people really could, yes, they need to get out and they need to vote. And then you hear everybody talk about, well, you know, the votes are only as good as, you know, who counts them and so forth. I get all that. I understand what's going on. I understand all the rigging of elections. But you still go out and you still vote. This is a very important election coming up in 2014. And, you know, but nothing, this is going to play out. Things will not be reversed. We will not go back to the way it was. I believe we're in a new world. It is the new world, and I believe people need to protect.
But it's not better.
It isn't better, but I also believe in order to survive in this world, people need to protect themselves and get out of the system. I believe that's how you fight them. You get out of the system, or they will destroy you, as they have destroyed so many, and they will continue to destroy.
I don't know that you can get out of the system, but you can distance yourself from the system. Very difficult to get out of the system. It's hard for any of us to do that, but you can distance yourself from the system. And again, you know, people who listen to the program, you know the conclusion we're going to come up to, we're going to reach in just a moment, and that is
one of the ways
you protect yourself is you get more gold. But it's not just a sales pitch.
It's the truth
of the matter.
It is. I mean, and we're not going to go back. Some people like the world that we're in today.
And who are they?
People like the world that we live in today.
Some people like the world we live in today, and they're entitled to their opinion. But some people don't, and they apparently are not entitled to their opinion. The people who would like it were perhaps the people of China, for example, or the people of India. They are getting jobs, and hooray for them. But at the same time, the American people are losing jobs. They're losing their standard of living. You know, why should we put up with it? Why don't we just put up a wall around this country and just say, look, we're going to take care of ours and you take care of yours?
I mean, you look to Washington, but let me tell you, I believe Wall Street is far more destructive to this country in combination of Washington. Mm-hmm. I mean, Wall Street has financed the destruction of this country, and yet, how many people and I know they do this because they have to, or they do it because it's your family planning and that, I your retirement planning. I get that too. But how many people on a monthly basis and corporations, look how many trillions, billions of dollars go into the stock market on a quarterly basis from retirement accounts, from pension plans, and people continue to contribute to their plans, knowing that they're just waiting for the day the plug will be pulled. They know it's going to be, but they continue to do what they're comfortable with doing. And it's, and we are financing, we're giving our money willingly to Wall Street and saying, here, take it.
Okay, why do we do that?
I mean, it's promises.
I understand the promises, and what people don't, we do it because we're ignorant. We do it because we are ignorant.
Yes.
And when I say we are ignorant, I mean we don't understand money. It's a great fundamental problem. One of the great advantages that the rest of the world has had is that while the dollar has been the world reserve currency, everybody else has had two currencies to work with. They work with dollars, they're aware of dollars because it's the world reserve currency, and they also work in terms of their local currency, whatever that is. When you begin to deal with two different currencies, it teaches you things about money. All right? You begin to deal with the ruble and the dollar, and pretty soon you begin to play one off against the other, and you begin to understand that money is not simply a number, and that's what most people see. They just see it's got a 1 in the upper corner, it's got a 10, a 5, a 20, a 50, a 100, and that's how they judge money. We, the American people, are enormously ignorant about the nature of money and the consequences of money and the difference between money and currency. And a lot of people say, who cares? We don't need to know. It all spends. As long as it spends, what do I care? And I'm not going to do the whole lecture on that. We're not going to have time, and I don't want to get into it. But there are enormous consequences. People in positions of power absolutely understand the nature of money. It goes to the heart of everything that's going on in this country and this world. It's close by, and if you don't understand it, you are easily exploited and taken advantage of by people who do understand. So how do we get into this problem? Well, we got into this problem by being ignorant. How do we get out? We have to educate ourselves. Where you understand the fraud and the deception when you see it, and then your neighbor understands it, and I understand it, and Melody understands it. And the next time some politician stands up and he says, ha-ha, I'm going to deceive these people with some crapola about how global free trade is going to make us all rich, you're prepared to stand up and as a group, not just as an isolated individual who might know a little bit and the rest of the people are befuddled and they can't follow what's being said, you can stand up as a group and take that, run that politician right off the stage. Do that a few times and the politicians will change their tune. But until, you know, we get to get a handle on some of these fundamentals, we have played the fool and we will inevitably pay the fool's price before this is all over. So what else, Melody?
It does get so frustrating when you understand what's going on. And you know, we were talking about the EPA and everything, about the small guy, and you know, who gets charged fines because his creek is muddled, and they go after these little guys and so forth. But then, you know, the bigger corporations are dumping tons of radioactive.
Yeah, I understand. They're going to get excited about a couple of trash bags when we're getting radiated.
But yet everybody stands around the little guy. Yeah, you know, he needs to clean it up, cleaning. We got to keep it clean. And I can remember Sliding Rock in Arizona, beautiful little place you could go to in the summertime, and it just got destroyed by waste and trash and everything. So they naturally shut it off to the good people who would go there and, you know, treat it as you should treat land. I mean, you should treat it with respect and keep it clean. So you shut those people out, and just because a few people would send, you know, dirty diapers and stuff and that down the creek. It was a place where people took their families and enjoyed a beautiful Saturday and Sunday afternoon. And then you have corporations dumping. I mean, things are so
It's irrational. It's irrational, and it does not. It's not in the interest, best interest of the American people. Let's take another break for some more commercials. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom, Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well, earlier in the program, we were talking about the Federal Reserve restricting Citibank to no more increase in their dividends, which was a little surprising. As of March 20th, the Federal Reserve came out. U.S. big banks have enough capital buffers to withstand a drastic economic downturn, announcing that 29 out of the 30 major banks met the minimum hurdle in the annual health check. All the banks, except for Zions Bancorp, stayed above the 5% requirement for the top-tier capital in the stress test. Today, Citigroup Capital's plan was among five that failed the Federal Reserve stress tests, while Goldman Sachs and Bank of America passed only after reducing their requests for buybacks and dividends. Citigroup, as well as U.S. units of Royal Bank of Scotland, HSBC, Banco Santander, they failed because of concerns about their processes. The Federal Reserve said today in a statement, the Zions Bank Corporation was rejected as its capital fell below the minimum required. The central bank approved plans for 25 banks. So, interesting.
Well, it's interesting, and they're failing the stress tests. Are they covered by Obamacare?
Better go. Hey, the 31st is
have they
the deadline.
Signed up for Obamacare to protect them against
the deadline.
The stress?
Or did they extend it?
I understand. I heard that. I don't know where they've extended it. I think they'll extend it. It's like drawing lines in the sand in some sort of a comedy, where you say, if cross this line, then there's going to be war. And they cross that line, you draw another. Cross this line, there's going to be war. And they draw another line, and it just becomes obvious they don't have a line that they're willing to enforce. And this is sort of like that with Obamacare. We're going to have another extension and then maybe another one. And the way things are going, it may be mandatory by 2017, and maybe not even then. We'll watch and see.
Reid came out. I people not educated on how to use the Internet.
Yeah, I know. Internet? What the heck is that? I have no idea how to use the Internet. It sounds terribly complex. Well, you know, if Reid is concerned about there are people in this country who don't know how to use the Internet, a significant number of people, what is his concern with American education? Right? If we're sending kids to school and they don't even learn how to use the Internet before they get out of eighth grade, maybe we may need to shut down the entire educational system and put kids back home where they belong and let them figure out the Internet for themselves.
My gosh, they have computers in kindergarten classes anymore.
I understand.
Anyway,
politicians are just shameless, and it's almost extraordinary to me that they can make such stupid statements and apparently get away with them. No one seems to mind. Yeah, Reid is an idiot. He's a moron. He's a fool. He treats us with contempt and disrespect. So what? You know, let's go watch Dancing with the Stars.
Do you watch Dancing with the Stars?
No, I haven't seen it in several years, but I've seen it in the past.
Yeah. I guess the Obama...
I'm not even going to ask you, do you watch Dancing with the Stars, Melody?
A couple years ago, but I... You have to watch what the enemy's doing. No, actually, I started watching this week, and the one with Kevin Spacey, House of Cards, which is about a congressman who was supposed to be chosen for the Secretary of State. And they overlooked him and put somebody else in there after he helped get this person elected as president. And they said, no, we need you in Congress more than we need you as in, you know, you'll help us get all these bills done and so forth. So you just stay in Congress instead of. So now he's planning revenge. And it's interesting because as he sets these people up, you see how really close to, not all of it, I'm sure some of it, but how probably a lot of it is very close to what really goes on in Washington. And so
I think it's probably what really goes on in the Real Wives of New York City or something like that. I can't remember what the name of that program is exactly, but
I don't know. It's interesting how they, but anyway, Obama's disapproval rating hits a new high.
Disapproval. Okay.
59% of Americans now disapprove.
I'm wondering if it'll go over 100%. Has anyone ever had 110% disapproval rating, Melody?
Disapproval. Anyway, you have Obama's approval rating stands at 41%.
Yeah, well, what can I tell you?
So...
they're all going to be there. You know, the sad part of all of this is that maybe two sad parts. First off, we can't accurately predict when the stuff is going to hit the fan. We can see it. We can see with a great deal of confidence that a serious problem is coming, and yet we don't know if it's going to happen this year, next year, even a couple of years from now. We are certainly closer to the problem than we were a year ago. That seems undeniable to me. I think everybody understands, but we don't know when we're really going to get to that problem. We have that level of ignorance, and it's part of all of our lives. But there's another level of ignorance, and you talk about 41% who still believe in Obama. Well, to some degree, from my perspective, that 41% is much of that is in this ignorant category. And they are going to be hopeless, helpless, desperate if problems really arise, the sort that we're thinking about, the sort we're anticipating. If the economic problems that seem likely in this country really strike this country, if that happens, I mean, there's going to be an enormous number of people, and it could be like 60%, maybe more, that don't have a clue to what's going on, how to survive, how to get by. And I mean, it's going to be a terrible, terrible thing, and it will be based in large measure on ignorance. And in the context of a serious problem, if it goes as bad as some people suppose, at least, you know, the worst case scenario is always the least likely scenario. We remind you of that on a regular basis, but we can still have some difficult times. It will force people to give up dancing with the stars, perhaps because they don't have any electricity in their house, or maybe they can't afford whatever electricity they do have.
Or cable.
And they may actually have to start reading some books. And they may actually have to figure out and say, oh my gosh, look at this. You'll never believe this. This is money. Gold is money, and paper dollars are only currency. And I'm beginning to understand the difference between the two. And one is an asset and the other one is a debt. Well, golly, it's unfortunate, but it may be that we have to go through an extremely difficult time merely to put our minds in a place, in assume an attitude where we are willing to learn the truth and even eager to learn the truth. So we'll see. Silver lining in all of our clouds and a cloud in all of our silver linings. But there's a balance. If you can maintain it, you can avoid a lot of trouble. If you can't, you're headed for trouble. What's next, Melody?
I wanted to talk about the Volcker rule that comes up April 1st, but I don't think we have enough time. Perhaps we'll save that after the first segment tomorrow. So
okay.
We'll talk about
that. How
about
platinum miners strike? This is in South Africa. And the headline from Bloomberg is platinum miners say strike causing irreparable damage. The largest platinum producers said an eight-week strike by members of the biggest unions at their South African operations started causing irreversible damage to the mines, with sales losses exceeding $925 million. Now, we're talking about an eight-week strike, but we've had strikes last summer, my recollection, among the platinum miners in South America or South Africa. Isn't that true?
They're always having strikes.
Well, they're having another one. There's still no dialogue over the impasse with the Association of Mining and Construction Union, which has more than 70,000 employees on strike since January 23rd. And this is from the big producers. That's their comment. Workers have lost more than 4.4 billion rand, which works out to $406 million in wages. The mine owners have lost. Now, this is interesting because the mine owners' sales losses exceeded $925 million, and the mine workers lost $406 million in wages. You could look at that, and at first glance, you might say, well, the mine owners have lost twice as much as the mine workers. But the mine owners didn't lose $925 million. They lost the profits they would have made on $929 million, which might be anywhere from, oh, who knows, $90 million, $180 million, something like that. That's what they're... And the point is that there's a good chance that the workers have lost four times as much as the mine owners in this situation, assuming we're getting straight numbers. What else do we have here? It says the financial cost of the strike didn't tell the full story, according to the mine owners. Mines and shafts are becoming unviable. People are hungry. Children are not going to school. Businesses are closing, and crime in the platinum belt is increasing. Well, you can wonder how this is probably all true. You can also suspect that the producers are trying to put a spin on it, that, oh my gosh, you have to come back to work for the benefit of the community. There's truth to that, but you got to raise wages for the benefit of the community also. But they're claiming that the mine shafts are becoming unviable, meaning if nobody's down there to tend these mines, they tend to flood. They tend to become contaminated with gases, poisonous gases underground. I don't believe they're going to be unviable. They just have to be repaired. But in any case, they're having a problem. And South Africa accounts for more than two-thirds of the world's mined platinum. It's used for jewelry and catalytic converters in vehicles. And my question to you, Melody, does this mean that platinum is a good investment right now? And what about Platinum Eagles? Are they even available? And if the supply is going to be restricted for any length of time, is price likely to go up to a significant degree?
Well, the Mint did begin minting Platinum Eagles for March. They didn't sell any in January and February, but they did sell some 9,500 ounces so far this month of the Platinum Eagles. It's not bad. People need to have their gold and silver first, and I think this is just something that can, just enhance your portfolio in the same way with palladium. But you have to always keep things in perspective. They shouldn't be your main items of purchase to protect your purchasing power. I believe these are, speculative type purchases. And platinum, it's $105 higher than gold right now. So that really isn't a bad thing. I think palladium, I wouldn't buy palladium at this level. I think it's way too high. How high could palladium go? Maybe 1,000. Still a nice little return, but I wouldn't touch palladium at this point in time. But what is interesting, this month for Silver Eagles, the new figures coming out of the Mint, 4,330,000, and it was just, they sold quite a few in just a week, because a week ago they were still under the level that was sold in February, which is 3.7 million. And so for March, we've sold almost as much as we have in January. And those are some big numbers for 1 ounce Silver Eagles. And I understand the big jump always in January, because you're going into the new year. They cut back Silver Eagle sales in December, so you have this buildup of purchasing at the first part of January. So I get why January is always a big month. But it's interesting, very interesting, to see March having where it could possibly surpass January's numbers at 4.7, so almost 4.8 million.
It's one of the things you have to wonder about, because the volume of sales for both gold and silver is increasing, and yet the price does not seem to jump proportionally. It's evidence of price suppression. It's not proof, but it's certainly evidence. How long can it continue until gold and silver start to reach true free market prices? Don't know, but it seems like it can't last a lot longer. When they do get to the true free market prices, those holding gold are going to find themselves substantially enriched. I'm Alfred Addis. We're out of time on Financial Survival. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.